Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Michael Tierhock. Welcome, Michael. I'm so glad to have you with me.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, my loyal listeners will know that I took about a two-month hiatus. I didn't necessarily plan that, but there were holidays and travel. And so I'm excited to tell you that we're back with a new episode, and I can't think of anyone that I'd rather start with than Michael. Michael, as you know, we begin at the beginning. So where were you born?
I was born in Roseburg, Oregon, in Southern Oregon. My family, most of my family lived in Newport, but I happened to have been born in Roseburg.
Do you know why your parents were in Roseburg?
Yes. My mother was actually raised there until she was also born there and raised there until she was 14, at which time they moved to Newport, my grandfather.
So she was just back in her home area when you happened to be born.
She ended up marrying somebody from there, yes.
How many siblings do you have, and where do you fit in the family?
That is a relatively complicated question, as I have just in the last 5 years become acquainted with my father's children, my half-siblings. And so for my mom, I have one brother, but on my father's side, there were a total that we know of so far of 9 of us. It's an interesting story. We went through Ancestry DNA a few years ago, and I got in touch with, I'm very close with 2 sisters and a brother. And there's another brother that I've written letters to. There are a few that have passed away already, but there was a total of 9 children on my father's side. And he had been married multiple times.
Did you have any idea about this, or what precipitated this search?
No, I didn't. The man that I thought was my dad, we actually had a DNA test and found out that we weren't. And so I had done Ancestry DNA wanting to find my father's family. And within 30 minutes of getting the test back, I was having a conversation with my half-sister in Alaska. So Sonia lives in Alaska, Andrea is in Washington, Dave's in California, and Ricky is here in Oregon. And we all get along famously. It's a little crazy, but we felt like family like the moment we met. It's really odd, and where we all keep in almost daily contact. It's a little crazy.
I think you just answered my question. How did you feel about finding these other siblings?
I haven't always had the greatest luck with family, and so I was scared at what the relationships or who they would turn out to be. And as it turned out, I got very lucky and I love these people to pieces. So actually I brought Sonia to Christmas a couple of years ago, actually. So
at the church.
Yeah.
So where did you actually grow up?
Newport until I was 9, and then Roseburg, some Portland, some Myrtle Creek. My mom moved us around about every 6 months to a year. She did not stay in one place very long. So I had gone to 13 different grade schools before the 6th grade.
Why was she making all these moves? Do you know?
Usually it was relationship oriented or caused by relationships. In and out of them. And I often tell people that it may sound like a rough way to grow up, but it made me very, very adaptable in life and with people. So there was definitely an upside, I think, to it in making me who I am now, as far as having to make new friends every constantly. Yeah.
So let's just jump ahead and get you into high school. Did you continue to move around during those high school years as well, or?
I did. I had actually gone to Douglas High School in Winston and then Roseburg High School, and then ended up graduating from Phoenix Learning Center in Roseburg, and graduating a year early, actually, because of that. Yeah.
So during those high school years, academically, were there some subjects that you found were very interesting, or were there some that you hated? What was it like academically in high school?
My best thing was probably to do with my best teacher, Mr. Keeney, was his creative writing classes. And everything that I would write, he would put on the board. And he was a real write what you know guy. And I would write what I knew. And for some reason, he always liked the way I structured my stories, and he would put them up as examples for other. And I wasn't always the greatest student, so that was a big deal to me. And I think he is a lot of the reason that I've, you know, written so many songs over the years and short stories and whatnot. I think it's because of his encouragement in that area. Yeah.
You briefly mentioned songs. What extracurricular activities were you in high school? Was there choir or some kind of music there? Or
yes, I started as a freshman in a group called Christians Incorporated, and we would travel around Oregon, Washington, and California. Usually we'd leave on Friday. We'd do a Saturday night concert. We'd sleep overnight on the church floor, and then we'd get up and do the Sunday morning concert and come. And we would do fundraisers throughout the years. And my mom had never actually heard me perform until she came to one of the Christians Incorporated concerts. And a week after she came to our concert, where I had the only solo, there was a duet and one solo, and I had the solo, Here We Are by Dallas Home. And she had me dragged to a band audition like a week later. I was 15 years old. So I got I got the audition, and I was a 15-year-old singing with a country band called the Ranch Hands for the next 2 years. And from then I had different bands, but yeah, the Ranch Hands course. And that was my mom dragging me. She had heard about this audition that they were auditioning for. And so I was 15 years old singing country songs like Jackson opposite a woman, probably three times my age. So
I can hear that song in my head. I'm pretty sure. I used to work in country radio. So.
There you go.
So where did the Ranch Hands perform? Was it like in bars or?
It's funny. Our first gig, yes, the bars, but our very first gig was Rodeo Weekend in front of the Albertsons, and they had haystacks that kind of stage all built up, and we had a ton of people. But the greatest thing was the payment. And that weekend, we were paid in pizza. There was a pizza parlor in that section, and we could order all the pizza that we wanted to take home, which of course to a 15-year-old boy is like the greatest thing ever. So that was the first payment. Yes. And from there we did a place called Gino's Firehouse Pizza. We would do every week. We played the bars around town most of the time. Because I was a teenager, I could only play bars that had a restaurant, and I would sit in the restaurant until my set, until I was actually going to be performing, and then they would bring me in there. So a lot of times while other kids were, you know, in bed to go to school the next morning, I was sitting in a restaurant waiting for waiting to go on with the band. But yeah.
What were you doing with the money that you were making?
We didn't have a lot of money. I had a single mom most of the time. And so we bought groceries, or I bought my own stuff or school stuff. I had to spend it on materials for the jazz group that we were in high school. There's always something to spend the money on. And it really wasn't all that much money bands, of course, you know, sometimes, you know, great, good night, all right, and, you know, plus whatever tips people gave. Yeah.
You briefly mentioned church. So tell me about religion or church during your growing up years.
My mom wasn't a churchgoer, but I had a second mom slash friend. It was actually a college friend of my mom's, Alice, who was my second mom best friend until she passed away about 8 years ago, who took me to church. And it was the Church of God. It was a charismatic speaking in tongues, which is something I had never been around until I started going with Alice. But we would volunteer together at the Christmas fair, rapping, and they would play go and they would play volleyball and have potlucks and fundraisers. And I just enjoyed, they were nice people. I just enjoyed being around them. So yeah, that was most of my church growing up.
So after high school, what happened next?
What happened after high school? I ended up moving to Washington with Alice. Alice was a reserve police officer and dispatcher in Grace Harbor County, Washington. And I went to help out with the girls and lived up there for quite a while. She bought me my first suit to job hunt in. I ended up working for some restaurants and a clothing store up there for a while before coming back. But yeah, and I moved back to Roseburg for a little while after that. And by the time I was 21, I was here in Portland managing a restaurant. So,
why Portland?
Well, somebody told me at the time that I could come up here. It's almost embarrassing. And sing jingles. It was the big city. But come to find out, most of the businesses here actually, there wasn't a big studio here at the time. It was just before they started getting big studios. And so most of the time, the commercials and whatnot were made in either Seattle or Los Angeles or whatnot. So not here. But I ended up going into a little studio and meeting Annie Michaels, who I would end up singing with for now for 30-something years. I think you were there when we did the prayer in Italian the first time I sang at the church. So Annie, she was just working in the little studio, and I asked somebody to do a duet with me, and she did. It was like we had sang together forever. She asked me to come do a competition with her the next week, which we won, and then we ended up with our own show at the Embers Nightclub downtown, and we've had two bands together, the show, and she's been a great friend for all of these years. So
your timing was pretty good.
It was.
So you're working in a restaurant and singing and have several bands. Was there ever any thought of higher education, or was it, we'll just figure this out as we go along?
I was pretty well figured out as it goes along. I was working in music and doing restaurants mostly to accommodate gigs at the time. And it wasn't until I was 31, 32, and I started working for the bank, I decided it was time to get a grown-up job and went to work in banking, which is where I'd been for the last 22 years. Yeah.
And what were you doing at the bank?
Started in credit cards, went to court blocked accounts, working with conservatorships and guardianships and learning how to read court documents and court orders and blocking accounts. And then the last few years, I have been the work director in exception payments and safe deposit operations. So that's what I've been doing until just recently.
And somehow you found Portland Mennonite Church, or it found you. Tell me about church in Portland.
Church is not something that I ever thought I wanted to do again.
Because? And,
because I am a gay man, and my church going when I came out in my later teens, there was a lot of talk about what was going to happen to me, and it wasn't good. And I kind of didn't feel that way. I had a lot of friends who were really damaged over, you know, my friend Joe couldn't leave the house without his mom putting, you know, Save Our Children pamphlets in his backpack. And I'm lucky I didn't have a mom like that. I always had a pretty good, I didn't feel like I was, I don't know, I didn't feel like the whole going to hell thing was, I didn't feel that way. And I thought they were wrong, that God loved me no matter what. But I related that kind of opinion with church. And so it was hard for me to go back to church. But Chris had wanted to get involved with the Mennonite because of his grandfather in Switzerland, of course. And when he did the ancestry, and then we were getting all this information about his family coming over to Goshen and all of this. And so we tried it out. And of course, you and I just fell in love with the people. I mean, they worked so hard to, I mean, we couldn't go to church without somebody trying to sit next to us just to talk. I mean, they were practically jumping over the pews just to welcome us. And we were asked out to lunch that day. And before we knew it, the people of the church were just part of our lives, and it just snuck up on us. I don't know. It was a blessing, and been a blessing. So
let's just make it clear who your husband is.
Christopher Bargoot.
And there is a COVID Chronicles with him too. We'll just put in that little note.
There is, yes.
So do you know about when it was that you actually came to Portland Mennonite?
I think it's been 5 years now. It was 2017 or 18. Yes. I think it was 18.
So at least a couple of years before the pandemic. So you were actually able to see people and meet people. And
right. And we went to the retreat for a couple of years, and Chris was baptized at the retreat. And yeah.
So let's talk about your new job. And then I want to know sort of, what do you do when you're not working, when you just want to do things for fun? And I'm sure that there's still music in your life. So you just started a new job a couple of weeks ago.
I did. What do you mean? Music in my life? What?
He grabs his guitar, she might have said. It was out of view, so thank you.
It's never out of reach too far. That's what I do to calm myself. Yes, I had been thinking about retiring from Wells Fargo a bit early. I just felt like I really needed a change. And then this opening came up, and Chris said, I think you would do great at this. I think this is perfect for you, and I think you would enjoy it. And I looked it over and said, yeah, I think you're right. And so I let them know I was interested, and here we are.
So let me just clarify that Michael is our new congregational administrator, taking over for Rachel Joy, who decided to move on to Holden Village and find a new career and new life up there. And so I think it was, what, just maybe at the start of the year that you started as our administrator in the church office?
January 10th.
So what did you discover that you didn't know about us by being in the church office? I mean, us being the congregation.
I can't give those kind of secrets out, you know, but
I have but to
there
ask.
There are a few things, yes. No. Not really. I'm privy to some things that I probably shouldn't be sharing, but I think all of the people that I've met so far in the church are pretty nice people.
We're delighted to have you there. Let me just say that here. So you found a family, you've got a new job. What are you doing music-wise? Are you doing anything professionally? Are you still in a band or two, or what's the story there?
No, I was, when we joined Portland Mennonite, I was with Rose City Swing. I was actually doing swing and jazz music. Yeah, LaVon and Joe had actually come to see that first concert after I did it. It was a fundraiser for Randall's Children's Hospital, and they had come to that and was enjoying that a lot, but got out of that. And then COVID hit, and I have done a couple of Zoom weddings, which is really interesting. One with a celebrity that I used to watch movies of as a team. He was actually giving the toast at the Zoom wedding. That was interesting. And I did Jennifer and Carl's wedding. That's right. So I did another wedding at a winery, but I have not been playing with any bands since COVID started. Not much of a space for that right now.
Is there any sense at all from your connections when you might be able to go out and start actually doing some of this performing live again? Do you have any sense of that at all?
I'm not even sure that I want to be in a band again. I like doing weddings and I like doing a little bit. I might want a trio or something small. I'm not sure. I will probably, inevitably, I get into that, in and out of that space. So it's pretty inevitable that I will get back into something like that. But I don't know what it is or what it looks like yet.
You obviously play the guitar. Do you play other instruments as well?
I do not. I have a piano in the living room that I tinker with a little bit, but I would not call it playing.
You've said you've written quite a few songs. Do you have any idea how many?
Probably close to 200. Won a couple of songwriters awards in the 90s with Portland Songwriters Association. I won the showcase the first year that we competed with a song called With You that I had recorded with some of the members of a big Portland band, Quarter Flash. So some of the members of that band had gone into the studio and we recorded that and people liked it. We did it at a lot of weddings and it won best song in, it was 1992, I think. And then we won with another song, Don't Name Your Love. We also won the following year. So yeah, and then I never went back again. That's funny. We won twice and I was like, oh, I've done this. But yeah, now I write for me and whatever strikes me. Yeah.
That was actually going to be my final question. So what's your process for writing a song? Is there an event? Do you see something? I assume you write both the words and the music. Can you just give us a little insight into how that works for you?
Usually it comes. Songwriting is a funny thing for me because sometimes I will go nuts and there'll be like four songs that I have to get out. Either it will be caused by, I tend to write after camp. You know, I do Camp KC for children affected by HIV. And that tends to be a very emotional week that brings a lot of things up. And so I've noticed that every year I end up writing a couple of songs after camp. Usually I wrote one called Love Takes a Village about the volunteers coming together. And it just depends on when you're inspired. They just kind of want to push themselves out at that time. And then there are other times where I'll go, you know, a year without writing or close to a year without writing anything. And then I can't stop writing. So it just depends.
You mentioned this camp. Have you been able to do that during COVID or not?
We've been doing Camp KC in a box. So like I am the music specialist. And so I will record songs. And this year I sent out these music diaries for children to write songs. So I sent everybody one of these and we basically delivered the boxes with all the camp activities to everybody's houses. And then we had a YouTube channel where we actually get to play with kids and tell them the activities. And so they watch a little bit and I sing and play and hope they actually get on and sing along with the videos or whatnot, but that's as far as we've been able to do for the last couple of years.
And what ages are the children that attend this camp?
5 to 15.
And how long have you been doing this?
Since 2009, so this year will be, my 13th year? Yeah.
Well, Michael, I'm sure there are a million more stories that we haven't heard from you. But thank you so much for joining me and giving us just this little glimpse into your amazing life.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to have you come here and interview. That was great.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.